Ready to roll into savings? Visit Dave Gill Chevrolet at 4700 East Broad Street in Columbus, your hometown Chevy experts. Right now, take advantage of tariff-busting deals on some of our most popular models. Experience the bold new 2025 Silverado 1500 with its powerful V8 engine and cutting-edge tech. Or discover the all-electric 2025 Chevy Equinox EV for an eco-friendly commute without compromising style or range. Looking for value? Browse our extensive inventory of certified pre-owned vehicles. From sporty coupes to family-friendly SUVs, each rigorously inspected for your peace of mind. Cruise over to Dave Gill Chevrolet or visit us online today at DaveGillChevy.com and drive home happy.
You are now listening to the Prescription for Purpose podcast, the go-to destination for women who are tired of feeling burnt out and stuck in the exhausting cycle of doing but not thriving. Each week, we'll provide you with Christ-centered mental wellness prescriptions to help you reclaim your peace, renew your purpose, and live life spiritually well. And if you're a therapist or a coach, the tools and insights that we curate here will help you make a Christ-centered impact on your clients today. Are you ready, sis? Let's get started. Hey, friend, and welcome back to another episode of the Prescription for Purpose podcast. We are hopping back into our conversation that we started on the 5 survival strategies that have been keeping you stagnant. If you have not listened to last week's episode, make sure you go ahead and stop right now, go back and listen, where we have talked about the 2 most common ways that survival mode shows up, and it really impacts us negatively in terms of our spiritual development, which is spiritual bypassing and performative healing. I talked about how spiritual bypassing is when you use spiritual language or practices to avoid facing hard emotions. Like, you know all the scriptures, you say all the right prayers, but you never really let yourself be honest with how you're feeling. And more importantly, you're not able and you're not willing to allow God to sit in that with you. And so you just stay busy for God, but you're still disconnected from him. And it's very clear in scripture that apart from him, we can do nothing. And so we end up feeling empty. We end up feeling used. It perpetuates this negativity in our relationship with God. And then with performative healing, we do all of the right emotional and spiritual work. We're journaling, we're going to therapy, we're reading the books, but we do it from a place of fear. We do it from a place of pressure. We do it from a place of shame. And so your growth becomes another tick thing that you check on the checkbox versus you just really pursuing healing and allowing the Lord to be in control. Healing then becomes a way for you to control the outcome. And so both of these strategies can be very dangerous because they look like maturity, they look like faith, but it's actually these survival strategies, ways for you to stay in control, ways for you to stay safe, and ways that we allow ourselves to remain numb. And so I wanted to put a pin in it last week because we really needed to sit with if those strategies are showing up in our life, honestly, and if we take an objective look. And I had the 3 other strategies that we're going to deep dive into today. Now, before we hop in, church announcements are going to remain the same, okay? I need y'all to make sure that you are a part of the Purpose Collective. Make sure that you are in there, chit-chatting up, sending your questions, giving me your feedback. It is our free community for the podcast. We also have the Spiritual Wellness Check-In, which I am pulling data, doing the things to really make sure that I'm addressing the needs of the audience here effectively. And then finally, May 16th, okay? May 16th is going to be what I'm calling the soft launch of the app, the Spiritual Well. It's coming out, okay, ready or not. And so if you have not already downloaded the Prescription for Purpose mobile app, it's still listed as Prescription for Purpose in the store. Go ahead and do that. If you want to lock in and see the update that is going to be fully available May 16th, if you have the app and you've opened it recently, you will see that the home screen looks different. Ain't nothing available to you yet because I made it that way. But make sure that you are locked in next week. I'm excited to see the
turnout of the app, the feedback that we get. I'm super excited, and I am practicing what I teach here, which is, listen, this the date is the date, and the date ain't changing. And so what we're going to do is put it out imperfectly, and we really have to learn how to be obedient and execute and not just delay in the name of excellence. And that's a whole nother conversation. So let's go ahead and hop into our third survival strategy. So we said spiritual bypassing, we said performative healing. The third survival strategy that really is keeping you stagnant is hyper-independent, or what I like to call toxic self-reliance. One of the great places where you will read about this is in 1 Kings 19, where we have Elijah. Elijah, he is a prophet who has come off of one of the highest moments in his ministry. He has called down literal fire from heaven. He's defeated the prophets of Baal, and he saw a supernatural victory. But then immediately after, what happens is Queen Jezebel sends a threat that she's about to kill this man, and something breaks on the inside of him. He was able to stand so boldly before an entire nation, and now he's running into the wilderness, and he collapses under this tree and prays and asks God for him to die. He is dealing with suicidal ideation. He is alone. He is exhausted. He feels disconnected. And then there is a shift. Right. There is this shift, because now this was a man who had all of this courage that was like, now my God will call down fire from heaven. He put the little stuff out there. He wet it up and was like, it still will catch fire. And that's on Jehovah. OK. He goes and has all of this gusto, all of this power, all of this strength. And now he's overwhelmed. Now he feels isolated. And now he's on the verge of giving up. But what's happening is that in reality, Elijah isn't really running from just the enemy. He's really running from the emotional weight of what he was carrying. The fear, the fatigue, the isolation, and he chose to deal with it independently. He chose to deal with it alone. This hyper-independence shows up in our own lives. Hyper-independence is the belief that when things get hard, you are better off alone. We often isolate ourselves. You feel like it's safer for you to carry the burden by yourself than to risk being either disappointed or rejected by other people. And we know that psychologically, this is a form of self-protection. We see this in people who have dealt with betrayal, rejection, or inconsistency. So if you've been hurt or let down, you learn to trust yourself more than anyone else, and you build walls instead of relationship. You convince yourself that it's easier and safer to keep people at a distance. But there are times, a friend of mine and I were talking about this yesterday, there are certain people who are ordained to be in your business. Notice I said certain people. There are certain people who are ordained to be in your business, and we have to be okay with that. We have to be okay with that. And we can't run from that. You can't receive comfort from places where you're not open to. The one thing that hyper-independence does is it cuts you off from connection. So now you can't receive wisdom because you're too busy trying to figure out the situation yourself. You are looking on the outside like you have a level of strength. And you keep telling yourself and using this Christianese, oh, it's just me and the Lord. But even with God, you are still keeping your guard up. You are praying, but you don't let the Lord comfort you. You're worshiping, but you're not really seeking rest. And so, like I said before, that hyper-dependence is cutting you off from connection. God was so kind in his response to Elijah and his hyper-independence or toxic self-reliance. Instead of rebuking him for isolating, God meets him with care. He sends an angel to provide food and to provide water. He gives Elijah a place to rest. He's like, come here, son. Here's a Snicker, and you're not yourself. You're not yourself when you're like this. Here's the Snicker bar that you need. And take a nap, okay? Met his practical needs. And then when Elijah wakes up, the angel says, "Eat, for the journey is too much for you." God saw his need and he met it. He did not demand. He did not rebuke. He gave provision. And that's what God is wanting us to understand. He doesn't need our independence. He needs our surrender. He knows that the journey is too much for us on our own. We have to be objective enough to know our own capacity. We have to know that the journey is too much for us on our own. And you don't have to pretend that you've got it handled. It's in our vulnerability. It's in our weakness, as we learn in 2 Corinthians, right? That in our weakness, God's strength is made strong or is perfected or is made known to us. So if we refuse to have any vulnerability in front of God and in front of others, what are you going to learn? How are you going to have provision made for you? God would rather you be vulnerable and dependent on him than strong and alone. We like to quote things like, "I can do all things through God who strengthens me." But if God is not strengthening you in a certain area, so there's a level of humility and a level of dependence on him, you have to be aware of that too. You're only going to have capacity for what God graces you with capacity for. So when you look at even the parable of the talents, the first part says that God gave in accordance to the capacity that each one of the servants had. And we don't like to too often recognize and identify our capacity. It's limited. So here are some things that I want you to notice or take an evaluation of, some key indicators that you may be dealing with hyper independence as your survival strategy. If you don't ask for help, even though you are overwhelmed. If you process alone all the time, instead of ever reaching out for help with people that you trust. We want to qualify our wise counsel. But if you don't even attempt to build wise counsel, you won't have wise counsel, you don't have sound voice in your life at all. Girl, this is not Destiny's Child, okay? You can't be independent. This ain't Webby. Okay. You can't be that independent and walk with the Lord. If you see vulnerability as weakness or exposure, if you are quick to give but uncomfortable with receiving, and if you pride yourself on being able to handle things independently, these are all signs that you may be dealing with hyper independence or toxic self-reliance as your survival strategy. And again, it looks like strength, but it's keeping you stuck. I cannot emphasize enough how much I've needed my village in this season. Everybody can't be a part of the village, right? Jesus had 12 disciples. Three of them he was super close with. They was in the Garden of Gethsemane. We have to start looking at how we cultivate community and cultivate relationship. If you are saying right now, "Well, that's nice, Charlotte, but I don't have anybody like that in my life." Why not? Evaluate the people that you do have. Why are you still hanging around them, friend, if you can't have authentic relationship with them, if you can't be vulnerable? Then we need to start maybe cutting some team members, girl. They're not going to make the cut. But we have to start asking God to provide us with people who aren't just going to clap it up for us, but who are also going to pull up on us. I have friends who will pull up on me, child. Because you cannot live the way God calls you to, void of community. That's why we have even the online spaces. That's why we have the society. That's why we have the purpose collective, because it is necessary to have a space. So even if you are saying, "Hey, I don't have those people in my life," why are you not in the purpose collective? Why are you not taking advantage of spaces or places like the society where you can have something, someone, anyone, so you're not doing this by yourself? So if you recognize that you deal with toxic self-reliance, hyper-independence, here's some reflection for you. Where am I choosing isolation instead of connection? Because it's a choice. Yes, we have to qualify wise counsel. Don't be telling everybody your business all the time. There are some people who are graced to be in your business, and that's not everybody. But somebody needs to be in it. And then what would it look like to let God or someone safe actually support me? What would that look like for you? And take that back in prayer. The next survival strategy is overfunctioning. You doing the most. Okay? In 1 John 18, we see Peter. Okay? We love Peter over here. Simon turned into Peter. He is always bold, always the first one to speak, always he down for whatever. Okay? But when we see him in John 18, he is allowing his boldness to cause him to overstep. And this isn't the first time, right? We know in scripture when Jesus talks about his impending death, Peter ends up getting rebuked because he's like, verily, verily, Lord, that will not happen, right? That was the first incident that we see of him overfunctioning or overstepping. And then we see in John 18 where it happens again. Jesus is being arrested. Peter pulls out the blicky, okay? Not a gun, but a sword. He ups the stick and he cut that man's ear off in front of Jesus. And he's trying to protect Jesus, but Jesus did not ask for his protection. He's doing what he thinks is correct, but he's off. And what always gags me about this response is like, where was that energy, Peter, when Jesus had asked you to pray and keep watch? Where was that energy, Peter, when Jesus asked you to pray and keep watch? You was asleep. Y'all fell asleep under the tree. And even though in this moment, it looks like Peter is being faithful, like he did a bold thing, like, oh, I love the Lord so much that I'm going to do this. He was actually acting out of fear and he was overfunctioning. He was trying to control something that required or a moment that required full surrender. Overfunctioning is when we take on more than what is ours to take on because it makes us feel safe. It makes us feel needed. It makes us feel valuable. So then you become Olivia Pope. You are a fixer. You're always to the rescue. You're always solving the problem. There are times where God may grace you to help in situations. However, when you start saying yes to everything because you're afraid of what will happen if you don't say yes, it is very much so giving over functioning. And from a psychological standpoint, this is a form of over responsibility or what we call codependency. Your identity becomes wrapped up in being the one who holds everything together. You've tied your worth to being useful, to being strong, to being dependable. And then spiritually, it looks like you're serving, but what's actually happening is you're striving. You're busy, but you're not present. You're always the one that's needed, but you never have any security. And that's a very toxic place to be because you'll get resentful. You'll get resentful to your assignment. You'll get resentful to people. You'll get resentful toward God because you're like, I'm serving my face off. I'm doing all of the things, but I'm not seeing any outcome. But could it be that you feel the way that you feel because you're putting your hands to stuff that God never called you to put your hands to, friend? And now you're mad at the Lord. We do not have to earn our value in Him. So if you feel like this might be you, here are some key indicators. You feel responsible for other people's problems and emotions. You can have a level of empathy. God may burden you with helping somebody through a season. However, everybody is responsible for their own emotions. Everyone is responsible for their own emotional stewardship. So if you are doing something, showing up in some way because you don't want X, Y, and Z to feel a way. You don't want X, Y, and Z to be mad at you. That is codependency. That is code.
Ready to roll into savings? Visit Dave Gill Chevrolet at 4700 East Broad Street in Columbus, your hometown Chevy experts. Right now, take advantage of tariff busting deals on some of our most popular models. Experience the bold new 2025 Silverado 1500 with its powerful V8 engine and cutting edge tech. Or discover the all electric 2025 Chevy Equinox EV for an eco friendly commute without compromising style or range. Looking for value? Browse our extensive inventory of certified pre-owned vehicles. From sporty coupes to family-friendly SUVs, each rigorously inspected for your peace of mind. Cruise over to Dave Gill Chevrolet or visit us online today at DaveGillChevy.com and drive home happy.
Dependency. If you are rarely resting without feeling guilty, if you are overcommitting and under-prioritizing yourself, if you find your identity in being needed, if you struggle to let things go, even when they're not your responsibility, you'll try to talk yourself into being responsible. That is you over-functioning. That is what codependency looks like. And it's a survival mechanism. However, that survival mechanism is keeping you stagnant. Think again about the situation with Peter. They come and pick up Jesus from the garden about 20 minutes ago, okay? You couldn't even stay awake to pray. But what if Peter had really been diligent in that prayer when Jesus said, keep watch and pray because the hour is upon us? That time that we're trying to solve everybody else's issue, if you're over-functioning, we have to have faith. We have to have a word from God so we can execute appropriately. Peter would have known, hey, this is how we got to respond. You can't cut that man's ear off. This is what's happening next. We need to spend more time focusing on seeking the Lord and seeking what he's calling for in that hour. So it's not that you shouldn't put your hands to the plow. You should. But you should only find yourself doing what God called you to do, nothing more, nothing less. That's true humility. The same way that people don't show up and they are in trouble for, you know, burying the talent, there's a level of conviction for burying the talent. If you take that talent and go and try to flip it beyond what God called you to, there, that's also you being out of line. Over-functioning and doing more than what you're called to do. If in the parable with the talents, if the first servant went was like, you know what I'm about to do? I'm about to go over here, dig up this one talent so that way the master isn't upset. And the third servant don't look terrible. I'm going to go dig this up, flip it for them. That would not have ended well either. Do only what you're called to do. And so if you're dealing with overfunctioning, here are some things that I want you to consider. Where am I rescuing others so I don't have to sit with my own need? Where am I rescuing others so I don't have to sit with my own need? And then what would it look like for me to put my sword down?
Our last survival strategy is emotional withdrawal. And a lot of us are real good at this. In Genesis 16, we see Hagar, and she is a woman who has been mistreated, rejected, and cast out. If you don't know the story about Sarah, Abraham, and Hagar, essentially, God had told Abraham and Sarah that they would have a baby. And Sarah tried to fix it herself and told Abraham to go sleep with her maidservant Hagar. She got pregnant. It's very much drama, loving hip hop, Jerusalem that's happening. Okay. They end up casting Hagar out because Sarah gets mad. Hagar gets pregnant. She starts smelling herself. It's a lot. But when we think about this, Hagar is a woman who's been mistreated. She was a servant. So she was in a position to where she was subservient to Sarah and Abraham. She's rejected. She's now cast out and discarded and really left to figure this out alone with a whole baby.
And so in her emotional pain, the only thing that she can think to do is to be, you know, to be out here in the wilderness. And she, although she left physically, right, there's this physical casting out, there's also an emotional one. She's also running from the weight of rejection, of shame, of fear, but it's in the wilderness that God finds her. And when he finds her, he doesn't come with a plan. He doesn't come with words that are harsh or rude. He comes to question first. Where have you come from and where are you going? And he calls her by name. He doesn't just see her situation. He sees her. And that's why she calls him El Rohi, the God who sees, because he saw her. And this is the first moment where Hagar is seen for who she is, not as a servant, not as a problem, but as a person who has value. And what we have to really understand is that in this moment, she is emotionally withdrawn. She's cast out. She's shut down. She's disconnected. And God still met her there. He didn't immediately just fix her circumstances, but he first addressed her identity. He first gave her a promise. He first addressed the fact that she is seen and was seen. A lot of us deal with our issues by emotional withdrawal. We shut down to avoid feeling too much. It's when you disconnect because connection feels risky. It feels too painful. It feels too exhausting. So you become numb, you become indifferent, and you even start to believe that feeling nothing is the same thing as having peace. And that's what makes this dangerous. We can't discern the difference between me being so emotionally numb that I don't feel anything at all to equating that with you having peace, and then have the audacity to try to say that we're trying to protect that peace. No, no, no. When we look at this from a psychological standpoint, what we understand is that we see this with the freeze response, right? So your body and your mind, when there is trouble, you're either going to fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. And the freeze response is the way that your brain, your nervous system, protects you from being overwhelmed. So if you've been through trauma, if you're in a place of high conflict, if you've dealt with constant rejection, you have learned to go numb instead of feeling the weight of everything that is going on. And so spiritually, it looks like you're calm. It looks like you're mature. It even looks like you're using wisdom because you're not reactive. You're not being dramatic, but you also are not present. You also can sit in a room, but not engage. You can talk about faith, but it doesn't really touch your heart and transform you. And that's why this is dangerous. You're robbing yourself of not only feeling the pain and the hurt, you don't feel that, but you also rob yourself of feeling the fullness of joy. I have been very open that last year, the Lord was like, hey, Charlotte, you gonna have to quit trying to protect them little feelings you got. You're not gonna be able to laugh as hard either. You can't just block off one area to your heart and think that the rest of the heart is not going to be impacted. Emotional withdrawal blocks transformation because it cuts you off from intimacy. You cannot heal what you don't feel. And we also can't heal what God doesn't reveal to us. You can't receive love if you refuse to be seen. And so I want to give you some key indicators to identify whether or not emotional withdrawal may be your survival mechanism of choice. So if you feel flat, indifferent, or disconnected, even in times where you should have joy, if you avoid talking about your emotions, even with people who have proven themselves to be safe, if you shut down when conflict or tension arises, if you distract yourself with being busy to avoid sitting with your feelings, if you tell yourself that you are fine, even when you're not, I want to challenge you to start speaking to yourself emotionally, Fine is not a feeling. Fine is not a feeling. So I want you to start practicing. Go to feelingswheel.com. Get you a feelings wheel. I'll throw it up in the Purpose Collective. Get you a feelings wheel and start identifying how you feel. Start becoming aware emotionally. When we look at how God responded to Hagar and her withdrawal, he doesn't make her snap out of it. He doesn't give her a lecture on faith. He doesn't say, oh, you walk by faith and not by sight. He speaks to her heart. He calls her by name. He lets her know that she is seen and known. And we have to be open to have this type of response from the Father. And so I want you, if you resonate with this, if this is resonating with you, to ask yourself, where have I been hiding? Not even just physically, but where have I been hiding emotionally? And then what would it look like to let myself be seen by God again? We're not even talking about with people yet. A lot of us, because we've gone through traumatic experiences, we don't even want to tell God, like, hey, it's hard for me to trust you because I had this parental figure or this other connection in my life that was supposed to protect me and love me and keep me and see me, and they mishandled me. And so now there's a level of fear. There's a level of frustration that I have with you, God, because I feel like you allowed that. That level of vulnerability, the Lord can handle. But you just trying to pretend as if that's not something that y'all need to deal with is a survival mechanism. And it's going to keep reinforcing itself because you aren't going to be truly transformed until you develop that level of intimacy with the Lord. So now that we've put a name to these five strategies, and I just want to recap them again. Spiritual bypassing, that's using spiritual language to avoid emotional honesty. Performative healing, treating growth like a performance instead of a process. Hyperindependence, isolating yourself to avoid vulnerability. Overfunctioning, carrying more than what's yours because it makes you feel needed. Emotional withdrawal, shutting down to protect yourself from feeling too much. I want you to notice with these strategies that these aren't just randomized behaviors. Please keep in mind that these are things that you have done. These are conditions that you have developed out of means of survival. These are ways that you have learned to try to protect your heart. These are ways that you've stayed strong. These are ways that you've stayed safe. These are ways that you've stayed in control even when life and circumstances felt chaotic. But what has kept you safe in one season, or what has even felt safe in one season, is now keeping you stagnant. Survival mode is something that we click into because it feels smart. It's protective. It helps you keep going when things feel uncertain. But survival mode is not the same as living. It is not the same as being whole. Survival mode is going to keep you performing. It's going to keep you pretending. It's going to keep you pushing. It's going to keep you shutting down, but it never sets you free. It never sets you free. Remember, survival does not save you. Jesus does. And so having this clarity is the first step. This is not about you fixing it. This is not about you figuring it out. This is not about you trying to immediately change yourself to my overthinkers, overfunctioners. This is not for you to go and try to 1, 2, 3, how do I fix this? This is just for clarity. This is about being honest about what has been motivating and moving you. Because until you can see the pattern, you're not going to be able to break it. We have to get to the root cause. We can't just treat symptoms. We have to treat the entire illness. So until you can name the survival strategies that have shown up in your life, you're not going to be able to move beyond it. So I want to give you just some practical steps that you can utilize to help you start to identify and then really invite God in to help you. So the first thing is to just be honest and to name the pattern, right? Take some time this week, go back, listen to episode 1 and really sit with which of these strategies feel most familiar. It may be more than one. And then I want you to write down the thoughts and the habits and the situations where you see them showing up. This is not for you to judge yourself. This is just for awareness. This is not for condemnation. This is you taking an objective look. Even if you have to remove, I'm talking about me, right? Even if you have to write this down like a friend who you're helping, then do that. And then I want you to identify the belief that is attached. So for every survival strategy, there is a rooted belief. What does this mean that I believe about myself? What does this mean that I believe about others? What does this mean I believe about God? So if I'm overfunctioning, that means that I believe I'm only valuable when I'm putting things out. If I'm overfunctioning, that means that I believe that others only think that I'm valuable when I'm meeting a need that they may have. They don't think I'm valuable unless I'm doing something. That means that I don't trust God to do what he says that he's going to do, to be who he says that he's going to be. And I have to make sure that I have a contingency plan. All of those things are lies. But based on how I behave, that lets me know that's what I think. And that's what is at the root of that. Then ask yourself, what do I believe that makes this pattern feel necessary? What are you trying to survive? Right? Do you believe that if I'm not strong, I won't be loved, or if I can't fix it, I will fall apart? Because all of those things are lies. And then we want to ask God to come into the pattern of behavior, not just to try to fix the problem. Because a lot of times we think that if God would just fix X, Y, and Z, if he would just give me the money, then I would be okay. But you find yourself in a cycle because it's not a money issue. It really is a trust issue. It really is emotional withdrawal. It really is the fact that you can't steward well over your money because you're overfunctioning and you keep giving it all away. And that's not what God ever called you to do. We are to give generously, but he's calling you to be a good steward and your lights is off and you're over here trying to fix somebody else's problem. That's not what God calls us to do. So we don't want to ask God just to take away the anxiety or the pressure or the pain. We want to ask him to reveal where that pattern began. Go all the way back if you need to. Like, God, where did this start? And then what do you want me to do instead? What does your word say instead? How can I use scripture as a prescription to adjust in this area so we can break and have deliverance from these survival strategies so I can fully surrender? And then we let the truth of God's word replace the lie. So I don't want you to rush past this. I don't want you to push past this. If you're in therapy, this is definitely a conversation as you meditate and you sit with it, something that you may need to bring up in therapy. Like, hey, I understand that I use this survival strategy and I need to walk through this. Don't rush past this information. Don't try to fix yourself. That's not what this is about. But we want the awareness to lead to surrender and clarity to lead to you feeling connected to God, because transformation does not begin with pressure. It begins with presence. So I pray, sis, that you have been blessed by this breakdown of these survival strategies, that you really lock in and allow the Lord to reveal to you the areas in your life in which he needs you to fully surrender and for you to come out of survival mode. My prayer is that God meets every need that you have so you can feel okay to trust him. And sometimes that's not going to come first. You're going to have to surrender first and then the trust will be built. But know that God is who he said that he is. As you go through this, think about the times where God has shown up and blown your mind. Things that you know you could have never done or orchestrated on your own. You're going to need to meditate on that as well. There are some things that we have lived through that our survival strategies could never. And so I pray that this blessed you. I love you, friend. Make sure you get connected with us in the society, in the Purpose Collective, and I will see you back next week.
Ready to roll into savings? Visit Dave Gill Chevrolet at 4700 East Broad Street in Columbus, your hometown Chevy experts. Right now, take advantage of tariff-busting deals on some of our most popular models. Experience the bold new 2025 Silverado 1500 with its powerful V8 engine and cutting-edge tech. Or discover the all-electric 2025 Chevy Equinox EV for an eco-friendly commute without compromising style or range. Looking for value? Browse our extensive inventory of certified pre-owned vehicles. From sporty coupes to family-friendly SUVs, each rigorously inspected for your peace of mind. Cruise over to Dave Gill Chevrolet or visit us online today at DaveGillChevy.com and drive home happy.